And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, sending a shout-out to the commuters who are listening to us, in particular Kim, who mentioned that he listens to us on the drive home. So happy driving, Kim.
That's nice. I have met a couple of our fans lately, I guess. People are maybe hopefully becoming more vocal about their being fans of the show, because, I mean, it does feel like we do it in a vacuum sometimes.
They recognize our faces from the radio somehow.
It's interesting. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel or subscribe through iTunes. Today, we are going to talk about Saving Alberta's Families Rally in Edmonton last weekend. It is also known as Ezra Levant's Anti-Carbon Tax Rally, but it is now slightly well known for 1,000 people chanting, lock her up, about Premier Rachel Notley. And we'll talk about the implications of, shall we call it, encroaching Trumpism in Canada. And then we will have Ward 5 Councillor Leanne Piper in studio to talk about all the latest political developments in Guelph and at City Hall. And that includes the development of the 75 Dublin Street project, the newly minted Guelph budget, which was passed rather smoothly last night. And then we will look back at the political year and maybe look a little bit at the political year ahead. But first, and this is kind of one of those episodes where we're going to go full circle. We're going to kick off the show by talking about what is going on at Guelph City Hall. And it turned out, I was thinking back to September when, you know, there's all this, oh, this is going to be the hardest budget ever. It's going to be so hard to get it passed. Or it's going to be so tough. And then it's like 6.5 hours. And that included a pizza break. And it was over.
Is that all those guys eat?
Well, it's, you know, when in Rome, it's, you know, it feeds a lot of people. And for cheap and easy and quick, yeah.
I'm not anti-pizza. I'm just saying.
Considering who else we're going to be talking about in this segment, let's keep in mind, you know, what would have happened if they ordered something a little more extravagant.
Canapés. Vol-au-vents, yeah.
Well, forget canapés. Samosas. Can you imagine?
Or even a sandwich. Anyway.
Yes. Anyway, it all went down rather swimmingly. One night of decisions, lasting less than 8 hours, which is a far cry from what happened last year, which was about two nights, about 8 hours per night. So we're going to try and cram as many recent developments as we can. But, you know, let's talk about the budget first. And I was actually writing a bit about the budget. I asked a couple of follow up questions to James Crowder, who's the city treasurer. And but I was also scanning other posts about the budget and my own Twitter feed, which, you know, Bradley
explodes every night. There's a
well, especially when it's controversial. Yeah, and Bradley Breeden, who was doing the budget meetings for Guelph Politico, live tweeting them, getting the responses there. A lot of people not too pleased with 3.13%.
Are the taxes too damn high? Possibly.
Well, let's be honest. In some quarters, the taxes are always too damn high. Mm-hmm. But
up is always high in certain quarters.
Yeah.
As we'll talk about in part two of this part. so the levy ended up being 1% up from 0.5. And there's some debate about that. But yet it passed. What was it? 7-5 it passed? Is that right?
I think it was 9-3.
No, 9-3. Got my numbers wrong. But see, I wasn't.
I think the only three against it, I think, were Councillor Billings and Councillor Gibson and Councillor Bell.
All right. I don't know why I thought the mayor was. But
No. The mayor. I have the quote from Mayor Guthrie written down here. We have to do it. We have to be brave.
We have a $191 million problem. I think that was which is true. And that's the shortfall over a period, right?
It's the ghastly truth. It's the ugly truth. And it's one no one's kind of wanted to address for a while.
And it sounds like the levy's going to run for 10 years. Is that right?
I actually asked Crowder about this.
Because usually a levy is like a one-time thing, but this sounds like, you know, to me, a 10-year levy is kind of permanent.
Well, you know. I mean, somebody pointed out on one of the Guelph Today posts that, like, have you ever known a government to initiate a tax and then end it? I mean, it's a valid point.
Like the hydro debt reduction fee. That's what it reminds me of. Like,
or income tax.
Or income tax. From 1970, its 100th anniversary is next year.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah. That'd be a good special, actually.
Well, we'll do that.
No, yeah. So I did ask that, and to Mr. Crowder, there is going to be there was actually a motion to go back for staff to go back to, with a recommendation by June the 30th, which is the end of the second quarter, about how to split the 1% between city building and infrastructure renewal. So there's no change to the 10-year timeline yet. But yeah, you're right. The original staff recommendation was 0.5%. A year over 10 years, but it is also renewable every year. So they could come back next year and decide to either – they could decide to reduce it to 0.5 next year, or they could decide to cancel it altogether. I don't
– Yeah, a new council may kill it. You know, that's
true.
That's looking way into the future. We still got
to Well, it's 2 years into the future. But yeah, it's renewable. But I think the 1% figure came from, and oddly enough, it was Mark McKinnon who got the wrath, the particularly sharp end of the wrath of a person we'll be talking about shortly. But he made the point that, you know, do we want to do it like 0.5% over 10 years, or like do it through the Band-Aid method, write off, collect all the money in a shorter, collect the same amount of money in a shorter period of time was basically his argument. And I think perhaps council found that more persuasive than kind of dilly-dallying about it. I mean, a decade is a long time in a history of a city, and I think a lot of people on council are probably conscious of that.
For sure. So to give people an idea, there was a hypothetical $316,000 house, I think it was in the today or the right?
Yeah.
Will be an additional $104 tax on top of the usual, so...
And I think that includes the levy. Yeah.
That's the house that none of our listeners own. No, I'm kidding.
I'm sure we have some.
We dream about it.
We have some wealthy listeners, I'm sure.
So what are we going to get for that? There's lots of things listed, 24-hour EMS and Aaron, which has been wanting, and that yes. will include the staff that will go with that.
Right.
No boost, sadly, to the summer transit. I know you were a fan of that. I am, too.
They'll keep the helper buses.
The helper buses.
And for some reason...
So it's like those dogs with the little vest on. Put a vest on the bus.
It does. I'm a helper bus.
Yeah.
Sorry. They should put like little Saint Bernards on in the windows.
Little thing of rum
buses.
On the front. Skills park too. What is that going to go? Is it like the skateboard park? I guess.
I think. I do believe that what that means is
it's
like
in the pipe
like a trick bike, you know.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering whether there was no talk of where it's going to be. They just wanted...
No, I think it's a plan. They want to develop a plan for it, and that's all there is to it. And I think that comes from the success of the skate park.
Yes,
which has also attracted a lot of bike people because a lot of people like to do the stunt biking and that kind of thing.
They don't really mix with something that size, though, do they? I've seen it.
No.
It's a few close calls.
Yeah, it's a different course, but I mean that it's
they
kind of
like
attracted.
The skate park at the ER. That's I know that for sure. But anyway,
but I mean it attracts a similar crowd, and one friend likes the skateboard, the other friend likes the BMX, and.
So then one friend is towing the other on the skateboard, which inevitably happens.
And one friend is wearing the Red Cross vest and is there with the first aid kit. No.
So what else? Weekend garbage collection downtown?
Which actually I think is way past due.
Oh.
I mean, as someone who works at a downtown business, when you put go to put the garbage out Sunday night, the garbage cans are already full.
Take a little stick because there's a rat coming at you. So
it's not quite that bad, but I mean the garbage cans are full, and it's not necessarily because of what goes on Saturday night, because the place I work isn't on the main drag. It's on one of the side streets.
Yep.
But it's because everyone empties their garbage before going home on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
In the offices in the area. So it's something that's probably long past due.
And I remember in the pre-bin world, it was something else. Ooh.
Oh, for sure.
Yikes. So, yes, that's coming. So in terms of cuts, one of them was training budget slashed.
Yeah.
I guess there's no pizza in that. That's separate.
I think that's like predominantly for like going to conferences and things. And
so the tax choppers will be happy that that's gone, but maybe not.
You would think, but...
There was a higher number than
I had.
It was $100,000, but yeah, that's great.
There was a snarky person on my feed about it. It was like, well, yeah, big savings.
I guess it's better than nothing.
Well, better than, yeah.
And what else did I see? A $5,000 going into an emergency event thing, kind of like if they want to host something downtown, like the Tragically Hip show, that they can have a little pool of money to pay for tech, I suppose, or something.
I guess, yeah. I think that was owed to the... to the success of the showing of the Hip Show downtown and bringing a lot of people into the core, let's call it the Guelphiness of the event, and people hanging out and enjoying a big mm-hmm. event like that. I'm not sure where you can plan for something like that, because
that came quite very quickly.
Yeah, it came quite organically, though, out of the fact that it was the last Tragically Hip Show and Gordon Downie being sick this year. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if, you know, quote unquote, lightning can strike twice.
Well, you never know.
But, well, it's true.
And of course, one more cut that we should mention was Phil Ault's kidney gone, and he's recovering. And Phil, if you're listening, we're thinking about you. And good job.
Didn't throw it out; it went into his brother.
No, no, no. But it was a cut. It was a cut that very day.
It was a very significant
that very
cut.
Day. Yes. Or the next day, anyway.
It was a very significant cut. And yes, we do wish Phil the best, because that is there's no such thing as little surgery, especially when they're taking stuff out of you.
No.
I just want to revisit the buses thing because, one of the things they did do was they increased the holiday service on Boxing Day and the Civic Holiday for some reason to half hour. All of that holiday service this past year and going into next year is 1 hour, 1 hour schedule. But in the new year, or at least for the Civic Holiday and for Boxing Day, it's going to be half hour. Boxing Day, I understand, because it's big shopping day, and because, you know, there's a lot of people who need to get to work on Boxing Day, despite its status as a statutory holiday.
Yeah, Civic Holiday, people getting out and about.
I suppose, but they also had the motion for Canada Day, which got they didn't do it for Canada Day. I suppose because Rotary Club pays for the extra buses in that night.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's maybe why they did that. But Victoria Day?
Yeah, like the fireworks. Yep.
Yeah, and
with no parking, really.
Family Day, that's another one.
Yeah, but February is a little more. Well, anyway, you can pick and choose your holidays. But
before we wrap up the Guelph stuff, we do have to address... Because we've been talking around Jerry Barker, who, of course, was like, he actually did post something. Right? We talked about this earlier, but he did actually post something today about the budget where he kind of railed against Mark McKinnon. Mark McKinnon, who was one of his chosen ones when Grassroots Guelph came out with their slate in 2014. But Jerry Barker not happy with him today.
Jerry's now beating on him and Cam. He just beats on everybody eventually, right?
Well, yes.
Well, except Pat Fung, his pal. I'm assuming that they're... I was telling Adam before the show, I made a point of reading Jerry's blog for the first time. And looking up Amorosi, obviously, and regarding the lawsuit. And the first posting I came across was from 900 years from now, November 14th, 2916. So in 900 years, everything's going to be exactly the same. But anyway, he said about Amorosi particularly, and I'm not sure if this is one of the things that's in the lawsuit, that he twists and manipulates facts. Now, to me, and we've talked about this before, too, in terms of where do you draw the line about libel. I mean, Jerry Barker wants to rail against taxes and tax increases and the genius of Pat Fung's accounting skills. That's fine.
Pat Fung's an accounting ninja.
I think so. It sounds like it, because Jerry can't understand why the city won't listen to him.
Yeah.
It's probably because they don't have to listen to him, but this is their concern. The problem is when that line gets fudged and you attack people personally. We know it here at the station and other things. Adam and I both blog. Adam more than me, obviously. But there is a line that shouldn't be crossed. And if you do it enough times and you PO the wrong people, then something like this is bound to happen. So Jerry Barker shouldn't really be surprised that this has happened. And it sounds like he's hired legal counsel and he's ready to go. So, because when I first saw the headline that he was going to defend himself, I thought, oh no, he's going to defend himself.
Right.
Which could get really interesting and just jammed up the legal system. But it sounds like he has legal counsel. So,
well, that's anyone who defends themselves, yada, yada, yada. But the thing about it is the word libel is never mentioned in any article written about this. And I did do the due diligence of looking up both the Tribune article and the Guelph Today article about this, and he's not being charged with libel, which, you know, it's kind of
defamation.
Dicey.
Then what is it?
Defamation.
It's defamation.
It's defamation.
Yeah, okay. So and there are different. Yeah, legally there are different things.
He's looking for 400. This is Mark Amorosi, deputy CEO. He's looking for 400,000 in general damages and another 100,000 for aggravated, punitive, damages. So it's, you know, the word libel isn't in there. If it was a libel suit, okay, I could probably feel better about this, but it's not a libel suit. It's like, stop talking smack about me, Jerry.
Yeah, but defamatory comments can be libelous as well, right? If you're saying that somebody...
Oh, sure, yeah.
He's cooking the books!
But, I mean, if you... If you spend 3.5 seconds on Jerry's blog, you know he has an agenda. And that agenda is, my taxes are too damn high. Why doesn't someone do something about it? And maybe the reason why people don't listen to Pat Fung is because his first argument for cutting the budget is to get rid of the entire communications department of City Hall.
Just trash it all. Don't spend any money.
He gets ticked off about the... If you open the Guelph Tribune... There's pages that the city of Guelph buys ad space for all these maybe two or three pages.
So that people know what's going on.
Yeah, upcoming meetings.
When do I put the leaves out? I don't know. I look at the trip and then I know
exactly. And this is,
thank you, City of Guelph, for that service. Yeah,
but these ideas are offensive to Jerry and of course Mark Amorosi. I mean, and we talked about this earlier too. He's kind of taken the blame after. Karen Farbridge, who lost the 2014 election, has been mayor for over 2 years now. Ann Papert was the chief administrative officer, hasn't been on the job for about 5 months now either. So, he needs somebody with a record at City Hall long enough to, to have those tendrils to Papert and Farbridge. Unfortunately, Aramosi's it, because I think Colleen Clack, one of the other DCAOs, was appointed this past summer, and Scott Stewart... I think this time last year he got the job, and Derek Thompson's been on the job for like 5 months as a CAO. So it's just...
I saw some other good barbs in passing that James Gordon is the Pope and Cardinal Richelieu of the progressives. And it's true, because I've kissed James' ring more than one. No, just kidding. But I mean, is that defamation? I don't know.
I think Jerry has to go back and read Alexandre Dumas again.
Something, yeah. But, great. Well,
I don't think Cardinal Richelieu was, like, pushing for, water restriction measures.
Just to wrap up, I guess. Yeah. Where he says he's a journalist. Where was he a journalist?
I have no idea. I think it was...
On the internet?
No, like, I think he would. He wrote like with wrote papers. Paper? I mean...
Jerry, if you're listening, let us know. I'd love to know who you
were.
He
very clearly has that style, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to say a Star paper. I don't know.
100%. That would be shocking.
Well, paycheck's a paycheck.
Depends on what. Maybe he wrote the crossword. We don't know.
Okay. Anyway, we got to deal with this. there was a little rally in Edmonton this past week. It was put on by Ezra Levant of The Rebel. It was about Families for Saving Alberta. Basically, it was nobody likes, or I should say Ezra doesn't like the carbon tax, and he has his audience. They were all rallied at Edmonton, at the... But legislature in Edmonton, and there was supposed to be about maybe 2,500 people there. There's only really 1,000, and they actually bust a lot of people in from Calgary and Red Deer as well. That's been fairly well documented. The crux of it is, as Chris Alexander, former cabinet minister under Stephen Harper, current leadership candidate for the Conservative Party of Canada, he was speaking. The crowd started chanting, "Lock her up." Which, of course, is a very famous repose of the Trump supporters.
Yep.
A lot of Trump rallies featured people chanting, "Lock her up," up to and including the Republican National Convention. Except in this case, I feel like nobody really thought it through, because what are they locking up Rachel Notley for? It just seems like they've latched onto this thing. And don't understand the context. I mean, regardless of what you think of Hillary Clinton, she was investigated by the FBI for her email server, and so you can understand a partisan person saying she should be locked up. But again, this goes back to something that does bother me about all these things about Rachel Notley and the protest to her. It's just there are people up to and including Ezra Levant who just hate her, and it's just very exploitative, I find, and just kind of dangerously misogynistic, and this is kind of like where it's gone too far.
Yeah, and speaking of misogyny, I hadn't looked at Barker's blog, I hadn't looked at The Rebel, but I did. I've cleared all my cookies.
We admire your dedication.
I cleared all my cookies. My computer started to smolder a little bit. But so his argument is that the NDP had buried a report, a document, and then it was leaked to the Calgary Herald. So he's trying to imply, and it's completely by implication, that in doing that, that and not releasing this document, that she's somehow broken the law. But then he went on to say, and this is a direct quote, "By whining, fainting, and pretending to be a gentle flower, she's confirming the stereotype that girls can't do everything men can." I mean, you want to talk about misogyny, and I don't think he'll say, "Oh, I was trying to be sarcastic." There's no sarcasm implied there, proving pretty much that he's just a jerk. And we know that because he's lost and liable and defamation before.
Yes.
More than once because he just says stuff. And interestingly, there were a couple of things Trost at the debate brought up. He said, I would have been there chanting as well. So if you want to join the moron squad, you know, go right ahead.
And he...
12th place. Sorry, 11th place. After that guy, nobody knows.
He went after Rona Ambrose for Rona Ambrose scrum.
Ro-o.
And
Robro. I don't know.
She's a nice lady.
She came out against this, and she called them idiots,
right?
Yes.
And she called it unoriginal. And of course,
it is unoriginal.
And Trost like goes on Twitter to calling her down for how dare you, like, she just lock her up. And it's like, well, you know what, you're not getting any support from your present party leader pal. And she's absolutely right, it's unoriginal. I mean, that's, to me, is the most galling part of all this. It's completely unoriginal because it's there's
Trumpism,
no context
for
to
sure.
it at all.
Yeah. I mean, if they just said kick her out. Or, you know, something.
Yeah.
Even that would be out. And that would make sense. More disturbing to me was that I saw a photo of one of the signs, people with their homemade signs a la Tea Party North. Carbon tax equals sodomy. Did you see that one?
I did not see that
one.
And
I was like, where the hell is that coming from? Like, how? I mean, I know how you're equating that in your mind, but how does that translate to the point? You know, like, you've lost me there. I mean, even lock her up even somewhat makes more sense than carbon tax equals sodomy. So I think that gives an indication of the type of crowd, for the most part, we were dealing with. I'm fairly sure, you know, not everybody there was.
No.
It looked like most people were in on it if you look at the video.
But
that's disturbing. That might even be more disturbing than lock her up. But it's juvenile, like. Both of
it's
them.
Juvenile.
Sure.
That's the thing. It's like, and on top of it all, don't knock until you tried it. The other thing, though, is to get back to the Alexander and Trost point, and Shonda LaBere pointed this out in her column that
Brad Trost.
That's what I meant.
Alexander, who's that?
Anyway, Chris Alexander.
Chris Alexander. Brad Trost. Chris Alexander, yes.
Yeah, not. I didn't mean. I wasn't creating a new person.
Said, who's Alexander Trost?
Alexander Trost. Yeah.
Chris Alexander. He
pointed out in her column that it's not typical for federal politicians to get involved in these, like, provincial spats, and that's kind of added an extra layer of weirdness to him being there and to him sort of, like, being cool of, like, with going along with it kind of thing, even though he
goes
on...
That's how he rolls, though.
But he goes on Power and Politics the next day, and he's like, oh, I didn't know what to do. Hamana.
And he said, you've never spoken about pipelines ever. No, I don't... Yeah, it's...
But I mean, that's the thing of it is, and Chantal Hebert said it was like his third strike, basically, because there was the whole thing after about the Syrian refugees and then the barbaric cultural practices line, and like, yeah, and I kind of agree with this. This is like the third strike. I don't know how he comes back from this and still becomes a national party leader. You just can't.
I did a little analysis of him on the Spanner book, so if you go to it and Google Alexander, you'll find it, because, I'm one of those people that have not much time for the guy, because he's just that. You know, to me, one of the frat boy squad that Harper couldn't cut loose. So, but like a highbrow frat boy. But anyway, let's not assassinate his character anymore. But he really should have stepped up a bit and said, no, come on. I mean, even if he did something like that, even just a hint of that he wasn't in on it, but instead he was doing this whole like,
he's no Belushi.
Lock her up. Yeah, it's locker room, really.
Yeah, but you know what? He would have scored...
Guilt by association.
But he would have scored mad points if he had said, like, something. If he'd done the Obama thing, don't boo vote. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like
a twist on it.
Yeah, and like say, like, guys, in 2 years, don't worry about locking her up. Just vote her out of office. Like, support your conservative candidate in 2 years.
If it was Kelly Leach, she'd be like, you're so right. She should be locked up. He'd be like, oh. She's getting a lot of traction for stuff like that, so...
Unfortunately, but
don't
I mean,
counter
it's,
out.
Ugh, sadly.
Yikes.
But I mean,
there'll be pipelines crisscrossing the globe. Yeah.
That's the other thing, though. Is that this comes on, first of all, the weird timing of this, it comes on the week where they get the pipeline approvals.
Two out of three.
Two out of three.
If you're pro-pipeline, that's pretty good.
If this was Jim Prentice, there would have been ass slaps and high fives up and down that crowd. But because it's Rachel Notley, she's the devil, and we have to lock her up.
Pathological hatred of anything NDP. But
yes,
and she's like, oh, she loves Justin. She really does.
Well, Justin just approved
the extraordinary leadership of Justin Trudeau. She said, "It's like, yeah, I mean, that's
well,
tight.
He got the pipelines. They got the pipelines, baby.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's
jobs and there's money and
the bit more serious part of it is like, it comes right before the anniversary of the Montreal Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, this clearly,
the chanting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So it's there seemed to be no real sense of propriety or proper timing on top of it all.
I think they really, well, I mean, it's Levant, so you can't blame the conservatives directly, although many of them were there.
Many have tried.
I think, you know, a bit of sensitivity training would go a long way. And I don't mean for the crowd or the mob, because there's not much you can do about that when people start doing what they do.
Right, yeah.
But it's up to those speaking and those present that they're there and say, you know, like I said, give it a now or like, come on. You know, that's not, you need to play teacher a little bit and say, look, guys.
Well, they're not going to
do that. So,
you know, and I do wonder what
8 points or something looking for.
Yeah.
Votes. It's all about the votes.
And I do wonder what effect that will have electorally, whether it'll just, you know, if that will have an effect on perhaps on the Notley government and their reelection chances. I mean, because we're still talking about a divided right in Alberta. And what are the Levants of the world going to do if it comes back and she gets reelection and in, I guess, 2019? What's he going to do then?
Keep on ranting.
And that's the
thing. It wouldn't matter if it's a conservative government, but still, you know.
Well, exactly. And it's not going to help anyone who comes out on the side of this on the federal level either, because they're desperately trying to put this kind of thing behind them. And then we saw that at the debate last night with Michael Chong rather strongly condemning this in his closing statements.
Mm.
Anyway. We'll have to leave that there, and we were going to take a break and come back and consider more Guelph matters. And because we are open sources Guelph, and we like to talk
we
about Guelph
stuff.
We should
call that stuff. Bit Guelph Matters. Or no, that's been
I think
done.
Chris Clark has that handle.
It's been done.
Yeah. so we're going to come up with a new name for it. And no, we're going to take a break. We're going to play some music, play some PSAs, and then we'll come back with our special guest, Leanne Piper. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was the Atomic Seven from an album called It's a Team Mint Christmas Volume 2, which you'll probably never be able to get because it's from a few years ago. And that was Señor Santa es el Monstruo, which means Mr. Santa, he is a monster, I think. I don't know. Spanish is pretty terrible, but
that's what Google Translate is for.
Yeah, that's right. I should have put it in there. Anyway, I think it means Santa Claus is a monster, so it's the most monstrous time of the year, in my view. Anyway, but that was a good song. I liked it.
This would be a good plan to promote Stay Out of the Mall.
It would, too. Stay Out of the Mall, Thursday, December 15th.
Yeah, that's next week at E-Bar.
All sorts of bands at E-Bar. $15 or $12 with non-perishable, and all proceeds go towards Canadian Cancer Society, towards leukemia research.
So Stay Out of the Monster and Stay Out of the Mall.
More info, go to the website. Vishkana.com is one of them, so. It's probably
hey,
the easiest to spell.
Isn't he the station manager?
Why,
CFRU?
He is? It's nepotism, this post now. It's a long-running show. Very good. Always good.
Yeah, it's been on for at least 10 years.
Action-packed bands.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably talk to our guest.
Yeah.
So we are pleased to welcome Ward 5 Councillor Leanne Piper back to CFRU and back to Open Sources, because we've had you on once before. You were talking about you taking transit.
Thanks. I love coming back. Thanks for inviting me.
We appreciate having you. We appreciate having all our city councillors taking time to come on the show. I wanted to get your thoughts, first of all, because before the break we were talking about the rally in Edmonton last weekend and the Lock Her Up chant. And I know this is probably of particular interest to female politicians, because it seems particularly focused on the fact that Rachel Notley is female, and she has this position of authority in Alberta. And I know from talking to many women who ran in the last election that there seems to be, you know, as we saw south of the border, there seems to be particular, I don't know what to call it, sexism about women running for office. And so I wanted to get your feelings on that recent event and what's happening in Alberta.
Yeah, thanks for the question, because there seems to be a lot of heightened sensitivity to it lately, I think, because of what we saw in the American election and accusations of misogyny and those kind of comments that were made during the election about fitness for office and, you know, should have stayed home and you know, those kind of comments. So I felt it absolutely during election campaigns. When I first ran for office as a school board trustee, I had young kids, and so I had questions about, you know, what was I taking care of my family? Those types of questions have a hidden meaning to them.
Yeah.
And my response was always, I'm actually doing this for my family. I'm doing it to have a voice for my kids, to make decisions that are going to impact them 20 years from now. And I hope they've appreciated that. And they've certainly been more engaged and aware in local issues and provincial and federal as a result of my involvement in politics. I also think that there's an element there of not knowing whether or not we can handle the big decisions. We're supposed to be a kinder, gentler half of the species, and whether we have the ability to make tough choices and also to have the influence with, say, staff or be out there in the public,
right,
and the ability to articulate positions that may or may not be popular if we, have an assertive enough nature to be in politics. So those kind of questions have raised themselves over the years, and hopefully, you know, we're past that through example.
Well, one would hope, but it seems to still be a thing that keeps coming up. We'll talk about unpopular decisions in a minute, but just you come back from a trip overseas. You're in Tanzania. That's why you've been missing from the council lately, is you weren't skipping.
No, but you weren't
off on frivolously. Sort of you were across skipping on the other side of the ocean.
I feel like I didn't have as good as an excuse as Councillor Ault, who was giving up one of his bodily organs in order to give his brother a better quality of life.
Yeah.
But no, I did. I spent 23 days in Tanzania as part of the World University Services Canada program, doing an assignment, doing some economic development work, building a website for the Chamber of Commerce there. A real eye-opener, and actually the timing, I didn't realize how perfect it was, but it was right before council budget. And so I got a very good first world view of what real infrastructure needs are. And I also, ironically, the first day back, I got back on the Sunday, and council on Monday spent 3 hours discussing the animal control bylaw, where we two of those 3 hours were spent off-leash cats and cat licensing, and coming from a town where every animal is free range, from cattle, goats, sheep, chickens, roosters, you name it, they were free range. It was a bit of a reality check when I got back that was a huge local issue here, but they would probably have been laughing at us back in Tanzania.
Your cats are loose?
And licensed? What?
And infrastructure, you know, a big topic last night, as you know, you were there firsthand.
I wasn't there, but my boy was there.
Yes.
Your rep was there.
My rep was there.
Yes, your thumbs and fingers on Twitter were there.
I had thumbs and fingers there, yes.
Your thumbs and fingers were there in spirit. So just talking about infrastructure, and we have real infrastructure needs here in Guelph.
Yes.
I'm not dismissing that at all, but in a developing country, it makes you appreciate how things like clean water, clean air, some of the environmental controls we have here, our energy systems, our wastewater, our solid waste, really top-notch. And, you know, Guelph is doing better than many municipalities in Canada, mm-hmm. but when you compare it to what's happening in a developing country, it's night and day.
And that's kind of what I was getting about the unpopular decisions. The one of the big decisions last night was the 1% levy versus the 0.5%, which was recommended by staff. And just, you know, looking online today, there is a lot of dissatisfaction, let's call it, with the 1%. But I know this was a difficult decision for you and a lot of people on council. And we quoted the mayor earlier who said, like, if it's time to be brave and we kind of have to do this. So in terms of just where your thinking was in going for the full 1% versus just doing it kind of, it almost sounds piecemeal, doing it a point, half a percent at a time. How did that come into it?
1 year, we're going to have to take a big leap. And that's this year. We could have done 0.25, 0.25, 0.2. We could have done it over the course of many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
But that should have, you know, that we could have done that 10 years ago and we wouldn't be in the situation that we are now with the gap. Now, that being said, we've known about the infrastructure gap is not new.
Right.
We've been talking about this for a decade, well before, you know, 3-4 terms of council. We've also been talking about it nationally for over a decade when bridges started to fail after major storms in Quebec. And I believe out in BC, bridges and roads really brought the issue to light. And we've also predicted it for 50 years. When we built all this infrastructure in the 1950s, when the country was booming in post-war years,
yeah.
We knew this was coming. None of this is a surprise.
Mm.
There isn't a municipality in Canada that's been planning adequately for it. Most municipalities in the last 5 years have taken the step of an infrastructure levy. We're about middle of the road there in terms of municipalities who are finally taking that step. So, yes, it was a tough decision. The biggest decision was whether to go to 0.5, which was what our staff recommended, and or the full 1%. The reason that I supported the 1%, to be honest, is because it closes the gap sooner, number one. Number mm-hmm. two is the second half of that motion was to refer back to staff to report back on what portion of that infrastructure levy is going to capital,
right.
Immediate capital infrastructure projects, and what is going to city building. And city building are the projects that have been on the back burner, the South End Rec Center and the mm-hmm. library. We have to stop talking about them. We've had feasibility studies. We've had needs assessments. We've had, you know, growth and growth and growth and growth, and we've never taken significant action to move those forward. So the other 0.5% are things that a decade from now, we're finally going to see shovels, less than a decade, I'd hope, we're finally right. going to see shovels in the ground on things that have been talked about for too long. We're finally taking action, and it really feels good to be taking a step forward.
And indeed, there is, I think, $684,000 going to planning for the South End Rec Center.
That's correct, yeah, yeah. To do the phase one design.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still taking baby steps on that, but it's sending a message to the public that those growth-related projects that have been on the back burner for too long are finally being taken seriously.
It did strike me, Councillor Gibson said, you know, we should, you know, stop kind of, I'll rephrase it. This isn't an exact quote, but he said we should stop dicking around with the South End Rec Center, which is, I think, gets to your point, is that for years we've been talking about these things and there's no progress comes. And this is something that comes up every budget time. And it's like it kind of moves further and further down the road. And I think Councillor Gibson's point was like, this seems to be the time to either put up or shut up.
And exactly. I mean, we have hockey teams that are playing at 1 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the morning, and ice time does not exist in this city mm-hmm. anymore. We have hockey teams that are going out of town and going to Cambridge to use ice. So we also have, you know, let's talk about quality of life. We you know, children who are engaged in community recreational programs, health and wellness type of activities are contributing to a better quality of life for our city. Physical activity, you know, all those research is there about for every dollar you spend in a child, you save $7 later on in healthcare and other wellness,
right.
Social services. So you know, those kind of quality of life things, a lot of people talk about them as frills. I think those are basic things that a community expects its local government to provide. And the South End, anybody who's ever driven down Gordon Street knows the building up of that community has long reached the critical mass where a South End community center is required.
Yeah, and because you're thinking about people down on, like, the Clare area between Arkell and Clare, you know, having to go to West End Rec Center, which is on the opposite end of town, Victoria Road Center.
And they're getting in a car to go there. So we're not building livable communities if we can't put facilities in the places where people live.
Very good point. And I am curious about, we were talking before we went on air, how smooth the budget process was this year versus last year, where it was two nights, long nights, late into the night. Even the budget delegation night, which was another long night when that came up last year, and there wasn't as many delegates this year, but it just seems like the process was smoother this year. So from your end on council, what went into that smoothness? Realizing you weren't there for a couple of weeks there, but there must be something there that maybe behind the scenes council was on a same page in a way that it hasn't the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that go into that. I did participate in the budget process while I was away through the magic of the internet. I was able to access audio.
Internet,
the interweb. audio recording of all the meetings was there. And of course, I followed this guy on Twitter while I was in Tanzania as well, who, you know, gives play-by-play of all budget meetings.
You don't want to listen to that guy.
I think you might know him. and so, I did get a flavor of what was happening during the public engagement part of it all. But I think in answer to your question, about 800 members of our staff and the public had input into the budget very, very early on. So there were three factors, I think, that led to a successful budget process. Number one, the effort that staff put in right at the front end, from all of our deputy CAOs, our CAO, all the way down to frontline staff, who were really looking deep down into the numbers and what I call line vacuuming every budget line to see, you know, what do we use last year? What's our 5-year average? So we had really good solid numbers. Number two, we broke the budget down into smaller pieces, and we had more meetings where we had the budget introduced to us. So all of the questions that we had, all of the fact checking, all of the queries about can we do this and what ifs, was all done in advance. Mm-hmm. And because that's done in advance, then budget night goes a lot smoother. Mm-hmm. And I think the third aspect of is that I do think that there was a willingness based on last year's budget where it barely passed. We had a number of councillors who didn't support the budget. And I can't guess what their reasons are. I think I know what their reasons are. Not everybody gets what they want in the budget process. And if you don't get everything you want, there is a tendency to not want to support the budget. So there's some political, posturing going on there. I think this year we all went into the attitude that nobody's going to get everything they want. Mm-hmm. So let's deal with it and be mature and responsible. And if we all get a little bit and it's a responsible budget, it's an affordable budget, and it's a forward-looking budget, then let's support it. Let's not play those games.
And it's worth noting the operating budget passed unanimously.
Unanimously, and I'll tell you, Adam, in my 11 budgets I've been part of, that is the first operating budget that has passed unanimously.
Wow. Really?
Really.
Any close? Like, was there one, like...
We had one particular council through my first... councillor through my first two terms who never supported a budget, ever. For whatever reason, no matter how good the budget was, it was
a true contrarian.
It was that person's personal decision not to support the budget, and so this is the first time we've had a unanimous operating budget, and I think that speaks to the work that we did to build consensus and to try to be respectful of everyone's position on certain projects and certain initiatives and certain aspects of the budget. We understood that not all of us was going to get what we wanted, so
that did stick out to me following the proceedings that it was a unanimous, and as much as there was maybe some dissension in the infrastructure levy, that there was a general agreement this was a good budget.
Yes. So yes. It was a responsible budget. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I was on the losing end of some transit votes. Mm-hmm. And I'm not taking it personally. It was still a good budget all in all.
I wanted to talk about, too, your service on the police board. You're no longer on the police board, but you spent 7 years on that. And mm-hmm. That's a long time to sort of dedicate yourself to one board. I mean, albeit an important board, not that there aren't all important, of course, but why did you step down now? Or is it just you want to concentrate on other things? Or
I've only been on for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's not that. It was part of the striking committee process. I would love to have stayed on the Police Services Board. It's a great organization. We've got amazing people in our leadership team there, from every chief, deputy chief, the executive team. The board is a professional board. Fantastic skills there. We were asked at striking committee to rank our boards and commissions. There were others who asked for police services board as well, and I think that there's some value in switching up the faces on the board. Any vibrant board has new representation turning over, add a new voice to that mm-hmm. position. So there were a number of committees that switched around this time mm-hmm. around, and I'm happy to have represented the city on the Police Services Board, and I'm thrilled to be stepping into my new role on the Downtown Board of Management.
That's another pretty big one, especially when they're talking about the direction of parking. And I noticed this about on Ray Mitchell's Facebook page. this wasn't a planned question, Mr. but it is.
Why is everybody yeah. laughing?
Because you should follow Ray.
I follow Ray.
Oh, you follow Ray. Okay,
yeah,
there you go.
It was annoying, yeah. But yeah, it just
passionate.
He's passionate, and I think that translates.
Downtown retailer,
but
sure.
I mean, if
it's good to have passionate people in every section of town,
of course. But I think his concern is directed primarily at what's going on with parking down there, with Wilson Street currently offline as they're preparing to build a parkade there. There's, you know, loss of parking as the police station is being renovated. And I think one of the things Ray was talking about recently was the parkade. They're talking about working on the West Parkade next year. So as a newly minted member of the downtown board, what's your message to merchants and people who live downtown about parking concerns?
There are short-term challenges. There's no doubt about that. Let's face it, any loss of parking in the downtown is going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. Our parking staff have a parking master plan where we're going to consecutively take off parking and bring back on parking in a very logical way. And so the Wilson Street lot timing is in order to be able to, like, we can't take Baker Street down until right. we provide the capacity somewhere else. So it would be more difficult to do it the other way around. Mm-hmm. Wilson Street's the logical one to do first. We have the GO parking at the Neve Street Farquhar lot. So we have a number of things, you're right, that have to be sequenced. And we're sequencing the best we can. I'm not going to pretend that it's not going to be a challenge. But the end result, when the parkade is built, is what merchants have been asking us to provide for years. We need more parking on that Wilson Street site, so that the end result is going to be something that they are going to benefit from.
It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind
exactly.
of thing, because I do notice that in local news stories about construction, and I've been paying particular attention to the LRT construction in Kitchener-Waterloo, where it's, you know, there's a lot of stories about how merchants have been upset by the construction. But I mean, ultimately, this is a public good, and this is a massive infrastructure project that, you know, it is tricky to balance. But I do wonder sometimes if we forget in the short-term effect on people, which is real, of course.
Yeah.
But
and we don't forget.
Yeah.
We're reminded every day, and we get sure. messages from those merchants. But the alternative is the status quo.
Right.
And the merchants aren't happy with that either, because the status quo isn't working. We know there's a need, and so tough decisions have to be made sometimes.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of tough decisions, we're almost at the end of the year, so maybe looking backwards for this calendar year, and in terms of maybe some of the decisions you're proud of, some of the highlights, maybe some things you wish you could have done better. What are you thinking about looking back on the year?
Well, I try not to, because I think once we've made a decision, we have to move on. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, to be honest with you, it could drive you crazy if you're always overanalyzing the decisions you've made. We make the best decisions we can with the information we have, with all the inputs from the public, and knowing the bigger picture and thinking long term. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, there are things that I'm really proud of. I think we've tackled some major issues this year that the public has really picked up the ball and become engaged in. So the water taking permit issue, energy. We've talked a lot about district energy and our community energy plan and how we're going to move forward on climate change initiatives. So, you know, we've had a lot of really good public discussions. There's things that I wish had gone a little differently. I know I was looking forward to electoral reform for 2018. Mm-hmm. That's not moving forward. We're taking a pause on that, but we have a Guelph 123 vote behind that pause. So I think the important thing about the decisions that we make is that we help educate the public, we bring the public into those decisions, and then if we do that right, we can never regret the actions that we take.
Is there anything you're looking forward to tackling in the new year?
We have, all the capital projects we've just approved. We've approved millions and millions of dollars worth of infrastructure for next year, so getting the shovel in the ground is going to be very visible, and it's going to show the public that we're taking definitive action on building our city for the future.
Well, I think we'll have to leave it there. But if people want to get in touch with you, if they have complaints about the infrastructure, no, I'm just kidding. But if people want to get in touch with you or talk to you about issues, where can they do that?
Multiple ways. I mean, I have a website, very easy to remember, ward5.ca. Email Leanne, leanne.piper@guelph.ca. Social media, I have a Facebook and Twitter at ward5guelph. The good old Ward 5 Guelph and good old fashioned telephone through the city of Guelph, 822-1260.
Well, I hope everyone got their pens out there, got all that down. But of course, you are very accessible online, which I appreciate. And we appreciate you coming in today and talking about Guelph stuff.
I'm glad there is a radio show that talks about this. I hope your listeners have an enthusiasm for our city. I know you love the city of Guelph. You wouldn't be doing this unless you had a community-minded spirit. And so thank you for what you do on the other end, letting people know about what we're doing in the city.
Well, I appreciate that. So thank you. Speaking of people who love Guelph, next week, Mayor Cam Guthrie will be in. We're going to have our hashtag Ask Mayor Cam show. And there is still lots of time to get questions in. And you can do that through our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. So do send us those questions for the mayor. We want to get as many as we possibly can. I just also want to do a bit of a programming note. We'll be doing our holiday shows. December the 22nd will be our favorite political documentaries edition, following up last year's favorite political films. And that's on the 22nd, and on the 29th will be our annual year-end award show, and then we'll be back live on January the 5th, so stay tuned for all that. And if you want to hear any of those episodes or any previous episodes of the Open Sources Guelph show, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel or on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. You can get in touch with me personally at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at the Spanner Book, and there are new things in the pipe. Probably over the holidays. We'll see.
So watch the pipe.
Yes, the pipe. We're going to change it to the pipe. I'm sure that's taken.
Yeah, I would probably bet that is true.
Pipe. The pipe is in the house. She's still here. She's going to take it.
I'll let you guys sort that out after the show.
We'll discuss.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here next week for hashtag Ask Mayor Cam on Open Sources Guelph, Thursday at 5 p.m.